You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
So, Blame It on the Rain by Milli Vanilli, released 1989. We're going to just friggin' throw 1989 down your throats. We have a lot of friggin' content lately that's just centered around that year. You would think that we don't know how to put the brakes on the ideas so that we don't have all these things doubling up on each other or tripling or quadrupling up. I mean, what the hell? We posted a new wave 1989. We've got the year-end wrap-up 1989 that was posted this week. Hopefully by now you've had a chance to listen to it. Now tonight I'm going to be talking about Essential Movie for 1989. And then here I am throwing out a Milli Vanilli song, Blame It on the Rain, 1989. So really, just we don't know when to stop, man. We don't know when to put the brakes on. But really... That song's important to me. What had happened was when I was in the Navy, I had told the story that in 1989 I joined the Navy. I went to San Diego for recruit training, which was the job rating that I was going for, which is DPA school, which is data processing technician. And what had happened was one of the final nights that I was there that I was still having to do my final exam to make sure that I got into my rating, I took what was considered, I drank too much the night before. So we were partying on the base. You only had to be 18 years old, so as long as you had a valid military ID, then you could drink wine coolers and beer on the base. So we're in the club, had too much to drink, but I had my final exam get my rating, which is the data processing technician, so I absolutely had to pass it. So I had the situation where at the same time, I got the timeline all screwed up. I completely fucked that up. I'm sorry about that. By the time that this rolled around, I would have already had I would have already gotten the final exam done. I would have already known where I landed in the class for ratings. And what I was doing was based on how we finished in the class. There was like a class of 12 of us. And based on how you finished, you were able to choose your duty station. So they had, let's say, 15 job billets that had to be filled, at various places around the world or on ships. And the person that had the highest GPA in the class got to choose theirs first out of the list of 15, and then you worked your way down. By the time it had gotten to me, there was a one that was still open for the Bureau of Naval Personnel, which was in Washington, D.C. So I had chosen that, and as a result, I also needed to take a urinalysis because they want to make sure that, you know, you're drug-free before they sent you over to the nation's capital. Makes sense. Back to the point, I was partying the night before I took the drug test, and in order to make it through class, because I was kind of dozing off, one of my fellow students, she gave me no dose. What I did not know is that in no dose, there the active ingredient, at least back in 1989, it probably changed by now, was THC. So I take the drug test. I don't tell them that I took anything because I don't think anything of it because it's over the counter. And then once the results came back from the drug test, I got in trouble. And over the course of the next few weeks, I was on a mandatory stay at the base. I couldn't leave. I was on legal hold. So for about 3.5-4 weeks extra, I was sitting on base waiting for them to send my urinalysis test to another testing facility and see what was going to come up with it. Now, the person that was in the class after mine was a young lady named Michelle, and she really became, in a lot of ways, my first love. We had this relationship thing going on that we really had a lot of fun with each other. She gave me a nickname that kind of stuck with me through my first few duty stations. I'm not going to share that with you right now. But I had, this relationship with her. And then when the time, and so I got a lot of extra time to spend with her when I was on legal hold, because I got the guys that were running, that were our company commanders for the barracks, they believed me as far as what I told them from, you know, me taking no dose. So they were pretty sure that my drug test was going to come back fine. I wasn't so sure because I figured if I failed once, I'm going to fail again. So what had happened was this relationship blossomed over the course of the next, for those weeks. And then I finally, my drug test came back. It said that I had passed and I can go on to take my leave before I went to report to my first duty station, which is Washington, D.C., Bureau of Naval Personnel. So as I'm leaving San Diego Recruit Training Command, I get in the cab to go to the airport. Saying goodbye to me right there on the sidewalk was Michelle. And as I'm driving away, the cab driver has the radio playing, and what's playing? Blame It on the Rain, Milli Vanilli. So when you listen to the conversation that I talked about with on 1989's year-end wrap-up, you'll hear me ask the question about songs getting linked to certain specific events in your life. Me leaving San Diego after having that failed drug test and leaving the woman that I really thought that I was in love with cemented that song in my brain as, with that moment. So whenever I hear Blame It on the Rain, Milli Vanilli, I'm right there at 18 years old, leaving San Diego after being through boot camp and recruit training command in the taxi, headed to the airport, going to go visit my mom for a few weeks, and then reporting to Washington, D.C. So that is a very distinct memory. I will always have that with me, and every time I hear that song, I'm there. So I don't know why I told you all that, but it's a very significant 1989 memory, and because I had Milli Vanilli playing there, that's what was on my brain. So where are we at right now? So currently, we're on December 22nd. This is Sunday night. Once again, I feel like I'm doing a recording last minute, even though it's not so much last minute because this is going to post later in the week. It still feels very last minute to me because I like to have things tied up and ready and edited and scheduled to post on Sunday night, and then that way I don't have to think about it through the week. All I got to really do is worry about the promotion as episodes post. But here we are at 7:03. You know what? It's not 7:03. It's 6:55. See, I got this weird friggin' thing. I could say fucking, can I? It's my podcast. This weird fucking thing where my alarm clock by my bed is always, has always been quite a few minutes ahead of usual time, you know, regular time. And I don't know why that happens. It just kind of happens over the course. It's not like I've got anything fancy for an alarm clock. I just got big red letters that kind of, you know, that I can see as I sleep. And I've never routinely have it set exactly to the time of the day that it actually is. When we go through like daylight savings times, I'll go around and I will make sure that I'm getting the, like the microwave, and I'm getting the, you know, the clock that we have on the wall. I'm trying to get that as close as I can to the actual minute of the day based on my iPhone. But when I get to my bedside alarm clock, for some reason, it gets a pass for being on time. But as long as it's not late, I want it to be early. So whenever I'm saying things like I get up every day at 5:30 in the morning, in actuality, I'm probably getting up about 5:25. But I'm okay with that. It gives me, in my brain, that extra 5 minutes in the day to, you know, be where I need to be. So I don't mind it being off. In fact, I almost probably do it unconsciously on purpose. Anyway, I'm fucked in the head. So here I am. I got some bourbon. Here we go. Nice. And I'm ready to get cooking on our next 1980s Essential Movie podcast episode. So I'm going to insert the bumper.
This is 80-something podcast.
Banzai!
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 Hey, where's the meat? I don't think there's anybody back there.
Have you or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals.
Ghostbusters!
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I.
Joe! Ex to each other. And party on, dudes!
Hey, this is Banzai Retro Club. I am Dave, and you know what? You're not. Shit, I did it again. You might be Dave. You might be a Dave, and I just excluded you, and you're mad at me. I'm sorry. Don't hold that against me. I didn't mean anything by it. You're Dave, too. Maybe this can be like a Walking Dead thing. We're all Negan. In this case, we're all Dave. So if you're listening to this, and you want to identify as Dave, then, do what? Follow us on Twitter and do a hashtag I am Dave. I'll get it. I'll know what you're talking about because you would have been listening to this episode, and I know where that is. And hopefully you love this movie. So as I do, and I try to explain to people that are new to the podcast, the Essential Movie Podcast List came from RottenTomatoes.com. I stumbled upon it. And it had the 140 essential 1980s movies that I guess everybody should watch. So this was a list that was compiled by their contributors and their editorial staff. And so what I had decided to do when I saw that list, I was like, it would be really a fun vision quest self-challenge of mine to record an episode for every one of these movies. What I wanted to do is, as a challenge to myself, is I want to record every single episode, whether I saw the movie or not, and trying to do my best to rely on my memory of the movie, or maybe something to do with the movie. And so that's been my approach through all these Essential Movie Podcast episodes. There's been quite a few that I haven't seen. We're not running into that specific issue on this one. However, I just wanted to bring it up that as you listen to other of the episodes, you may hear me say, hey, haven't seen it. Sometimes I'll have a good story as to why I haven't seen it. Some cases, maybe it's not a good story, but I think it is. So you're just dealing with it. So, as I like to do, I like to identify the movie, which I have not done yet, but you know because you clicked on the title of the episode. We're talking about episode, or this is number 92 on the Essential Countdown list, which is Dead Poets Society, released in 1989. So as I do at this time, I usually insert the trailer. I'll do that here.
Dare to walk a new path. Dare to strike out and find new ground.
Audiences and critics have found a new and different kind of movie. A movie that's left them cheering and touched their lives.
Yes!
Touchstone Pictures presents Robin Williams.
Well, is this a dagger I see before me?
In the most highly acclaimed movie of the year, Dead Poets Society.
Language was developed for one endeavor, and that is
to communicate.
No! To woo women.
Gene Shalit hailed Dead Poets Society as a classic, one of the most magnificent motion pictures I've seen.
Tear out the entire introduction.
Rip, shred, tear.
It's a compelling drama. Robin Williams' acting will astonish you. Rave sneak previews.
This is a battle, a war, and the casualties could be your hearts and souls.
And Joel Siegel proclaims Robin Williams brilliant. Robin Williams, he'll make you laugh.
I like Byron. I give him a 42, but I can't dance to it.
He'll make you feel.
Seize the day.
I'm going to do it.
He'll make you care.
Medicine, law, business, engineering. These are noble pursuits. But poetry, romance, love. These are what we stay alive for.
Touchstone Pictures presents Dead Poets Society. Discover for yourself what all the cheering is about.
Now, what I'll do is I'll say, hey, Google, tell us about Dead Poets Society.
Dead Poets Society is a 1989 movie directed by Peter Weir, starring Robin Williams, Ethan Hawke, and Robert Sean Leonard.
Hey Google, give us a synopsis of Dead Poets Society.
Sorry, I can't process donations to that organization right now. Do you want to donate to another organization?
No.
Okay, maybe another time.
You know, this is the last few episodes that I've done, Google was not able to give me the synopsis. And I was going strong there. I was going strong there with asking her to give me kind of an overview of the movie. And she was giving us a really good rundown as to, you know, what the plot points were. But she's been failing me. I think that maybe there's something that's going on with her that has changed, where she's not so much giving me the synopsis. Let me try one other thing here. Hey, Google, what is the plot behind Dead Poets Society?
According to Wikipedia, set in 1959 at the fictional elite conservative Vermont boarding school Welton Academy, it tells the story of an English teacher who inspires his students through his teaching of poetry. To find out more, look for the link in your Google Home or Google Assistant app.
All right, so that's a little self-mental note for myself, is to remember to use word plot versus synopsis. I was using synopsis earlier on, and for some reason that worked really well, but now it's not. Bizarre. So my relationship with this movie, I have seen it, and I do love this movie. I think it's a really great Robin Williams vehicle. I think he excels in this movie. I just really love, you know, his delivery of and being a little bit more serious than previous movies that, you know, we may have seen him in. I mean, after all, this is the Mork from Mork guy, you know, Mork and Mindy. We all know the crazy antics of his while he's doing his stand-up comedy. Now, I mean, obviously it's tragic as to what happens with Robin when he had taken his own life. But you know, this movie had some serious undertones, much like Good Will Hunting, and I think he did wonderful in that role. So I think it's I really, really, really enjoyed his rendition of the teacher, Keating, Professor Keating. That's got to be it. That's the other thing that I don't like to do is look up IMDb and bring up like a whole bunch of stuff on the internet when I'm doing these. So I'm going to get things wrong, and that's just the way it is. Because if I bring it up on IMDb, I'll want to read, you know, stats and facts and figures to you guys, and you wouldn't be interested in that because you're going to forget it almost as soon as I, you know, give you that, you know, those facts and figures. So let's remember back when the second duty station in the Navy, I was in Norfolk, Virginia, and I had actually had gotten married and then separated. And when I was separated, I, rather than going to live on base housing, I had decided that I was going to rent an apartment right next to the base. So after a while, it was a one bedroom apartment, and I had also taken on like a part-time job because I wanted some extra spending cash. So I worked at the local Food Lion, which is a grocery store chain in Virginia. And then I met a friend of mine while I was working, a guy named Steve, and then he would eventually become my roommate. Now, one of the many nights that we had just palling around and being goofy, we were talking about this movie. We were talking about Dead Poets Society. And in my brain, I did not at all believe that the main character of Todd was Ethan Hawke. For some reason in my brain, I was so adamant. I was like, there's no way that that guy is Ethan Hawke. Because, you know, by then I would have seen him in Reality Bites. And I would have seen a much different Ethan Hawke than he was in Dead Poets Society. So I was so sure. I was like, you know, I remember us just getting like very like adamant, you know. He's like, no, Ethan Hawke is, you know, the guy in the movie. And I'm like, that is not Ethan Hawke. It's not like we were watching it real time, but I just remember the lively debate. Of course, he proved me wrong. I was way off base. I had that completely wrong. But just to bring up the fact that, you know, it was interesting that, you know, that memory of us having that discussion of that movie, and by then this would have been 94-ish, 93, 94-ish. So it was really cool that, you know, this was still a movie that was significant to be talking about and, you know, kind of revisiting, you know, as far as like, you know, mental discussion. So what else about this movie? The character Todd, which was played by Ethan Hawke, obviously, you know, courtesy of me being stupid. He's very, very introverted, and I related to his character in so many ways, people. You can't believe how much I related to his character. Now, he was extreme. He was an extreme introvert, but throughout my high school career, I remember any time that I heard we're going to be giving an oral presentation in front of the class, my mind automatically panicked. I remember this being such a big deal for me where I just couldn't process how I was going to do this. When the time of giving presentations was finally at hand and the teacher would look for volunteers to get things kicked off, never raised my hand. In fact, I would wait to be called and, you know, very reluctantly go do my thing. And I'm trying to figure out where that comes from. You know, what happened to me where that was one of those things where I was afraid to speak up in public gatherings or around a bunch of people. I don't know how that happened. I don't know how I got wired that way. I think that I may have really recognized that by the time I got to my senior year in high school, I actually did volunteer to be in the school play because I think I wanted to challenge myself. And I started to have some positive reactions courtesy of my English teacher at the time. So because she was encouraging, I kind of ran with it. And I'm so glad that she was, because then I know I wouldn't be where I'm at now. It's not that I'm speaking to big groups at all times, but if I have to address a group of people at a meeting, or if I have to come up with a presentation where I have to fill the hour to talk to a bunch of people, direct reports, host a conference call, I have no problems. I have no issues. I don't even sweat that stuff anymore. That's not a big deal. So something, it feels like I have to attribute this back to my high school teacher, my high school English teacher. I feel that it was her encouragement, you know, to get me to volunteer to go to the school play, but then also having bosses that had encouraged me. And as I progressed into the next level of jobs, that I was able to defeat that psychological issue. And I bring that up because I recognize that in this movie. I recognize that Todd had that big, huge issue of being able to talk. And I remember that scene where Professor Keating, or Robin Williams, had covered up his eyes and made him relay what was on his brain for his poem. And it was one of those things where once he finally had let that out, and he had let, you know, he'd shown his emotions, you know, Professor Keating had said to him, "Don't you forget this." And it almost feels like I kind of lived through that moment back when I was a senior in high school, and maybe that's the reason why it's such a big movie for me, why I really connected to it. So I think there's a lot more going on with me as far as relating to this movie that I ever realized. So let's see, outside of that, what else is significant here? Josh Charles. Josh Charles is in the movie. There was a TV show that I really loved called Sports Night. Josh Charles was one of the co-anchors of that TV show, because they were doing it's basically a comedy of them putting together a sports TV channel, TV show, late night TV show. And I remember loving Josh Charles in that role, but also realizing that he was in, you know, that I'd seen him before in this movie. So I think both Ethan Hawke, Josh Charles, Robin Williams, all outstanding. Love those guys in these roles. What else do I got to talk about? That might be enough. I think we might be good there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to remind everybody. Well, hold on, Matt. I'm going to remind everybody that we have a website out there called BanzaiRetroClub.com, BanzaiRetroClub.com. On that website, you can get to our links for social media. You can follow us on Twitter. There's Facebook, Instagram. Those are really the ones that we're doing stuff on now. But there's other links for Tumblr. So if you want to follow us on all that stuff, that'd be really great. You want to interact with us, please do that. We really do appreciate any kind of input that you'd like to give. Shoot us an email. That's McFly@BanzaiRetroClub.com. If you have one of your iPhone devices and you want to give us a rating review and a follow on iTunes, we would very much appreciate that. If you're on the Podbean app and you're one of our followers, we do appreciate you in so many ways. Thank you, thank you, thank you. There's also a way that you can comment on specific episodes. So if you want to comment on this episode and you're listening through the Podbean app, do me a favor. Just put the comment, "I am Dave," and I'll get it. I think it's funny. to kind of bring things back full circle from my preamble talk. Let's see. I told you about the website, told you about following us, email mcflybonsairetroclub.com, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I think I'm good. So this is where I'm going to remind everybody to just please, 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 please be excellent to each other. And since I have no idea when you're listening to this, have a good whatever. Bye-bye.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
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 On the next episode of the Essential Movies Podcast, we're going to be talking about Commando, 1985.